Hi, everyone. It's Ryan Hoover, your host of Product Hunt Radio, where I'm joined with founders, investors, and makers that are shaping the future of tech. Today, we're recording from sunny Los Angeles with Sophia Amoruso and Susie Rue. Sophia is an incredible entrepreneur that I've gotten to know over the past year. Her path to entrepreneurship started off very young. At the age of 22, she found a nasty gal selling vintage clothing on eBay. This side hustle turned into a massive company with hundreds of employees before it ultimately filed for bankruptcy a decade later. We talk a bit about this on the podcast. Now she's building a new company, a community to support professional women. They host events twice a year, publish a daily newsletter, host a few wildly popular podcasts, and they're actually working on a top secret community focused project that listeners of the show, I think, would dig. Our other guest, Susie, is a super special person. I met her at Coachella in 2015, just as she was transitioning her career from entertainment and media to the world of venture capital. She joined Troy Carter, longtime music manager turned investor and entrepreneur, to invest in new companies and help manage the portfolio, which includes Uber, Warby Parker, Snap, and actually Girlboss. Shortly after that, she became a partner at Cross Culture Ventures, a seed stage fund in LA, working with Marla Nichols and Troy. On this show, we talk about how tech can help us become more mindful and calm, a $40 astrology app, and the stinky truth about probiotics. But before we jump in, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors. So I'm here with Guillaume, VP of Growth at Drift, to talk about how he uses Airtable. One fun fact, a lot of people like Guillaume are using it to build full-fledged apps without writing a line of code.
Can you kind of walk through what is an MVP app that you've built using Airtable, man?
It's basically a small service where people can go and hit a Drift bot, enter their domain, their email, and expect in their inbox after 2 days an analysis from us on how long their sales team took to respond, which is super important for any business that has a sales team. And we wanted to build that. Instead of, you know, having a big engineering project with a database and all that, we just created an Airtable database. We hooked Zapier and Drift on top of it. 3-4 simple steps, which creates a great app which delivers value with zero coding. It's just insane.
You can get $50 in free credit by visiting airtable.com/producthunt. Intercom is a tool we've been using since the very beginning of Product Hunt. It powers our customer support and a lot of our outbound messaging. I have Jake on the line, head of support at Product Hunt. You know, one of my favorite parts of Intercom is it actually tracks a lot of information about each user, including location and some of their behavior on the site. How have we used the targeting aspects?
We absolutely see who has been using the site, how long it's been since they've interacted with the site, and we can take that information and use it to help us inform how users are interacting with Product Hunt. And then we can actually target and engage users who maybe have slipped away for a bit, and it really helps us with re-engagement of our community.
Visit intercom.com to give it a try. Hello, everybody. This is Ryan Hoover with Product Hunt Radio. I'm actually in beautiful LA up in the hills with Sophia and Susie. How's it going?
Good.
Is that your dog that we hear in the background?
Yeah. So, like, we thought they'd make noise if they were in the room, and then we made them leave the room, and now they're just whining. So, there's no escaping them.
Poor they're jealous. Pups. Yeah. They're just jealous. So, Sophie, what's new with you? What's going on at Girlboss?
Oh, man. So we're a year and a half in, and we started, you know, with a conference. I just got up and started running and was like, okay, I know all these inspiring women. Let's get them together.
I guess you started with a book and a podcast.
I mean, yeah.
And a foundation.
As a company, it started with the conference. But yeah, Girlboss has been around. I mean, I wrote the book 4 years ago. If you don't know, it was a New York Times bestseller. It was an account of my time building Nasty Gal, which I spent 10 years doing.
10 years is a crazy long time in startup land.
It's enough.
It's wild.
It was enough. Yeah. You know, it was devastating when it ended, but it was also like things happen in time. You know, it was like 10 years, 22 to 32 years old. It was really the only thing I had done in my adult life. So it's really nice to start over with all the things I learned after a decade. And so today, we're about 24 people. We have raised money from a lot of really great people, including Lightspeed and, I don't know, Gary Vee and Dave Morin and both of you. Susie and Ryan here. So I'm very lucky to have just such great, smart investors who are also advisors, really, who understand what we're doing. And so today we're creating content. We work with brands to create value for our audience, for those brands, for ourselves, mostly through like education and utility. So nothing we do is really like a logo slap. So I guess it kind of is like a hybrid media company, but it's also a community. And we activate that community experientially at our conferences and digitally right now through social. And I mean, the hashtag girlboss has been used 12 million times on Instagram.
And you have a podcast.
And I have a podcast. A few of them, and actually. It's a lot of things. It might be too many things.
Yeah.
It would be nice if it was a single channel, but it just began as, you know, as something that lived across a variety of channels. And so that's where we are today. And we're building something very exciting that will galvanize that community and bring them online to be able to engage with one another.
Have you talked much about the thing you're building? I don't know how much I can share.
So yeah, I'll not keep a whole lot. I mean, we have a place where you can sign up to be the first to hear about it when it launches at thefuture.girlboss.com. I mean, it's social in nature. There's not a whole lot more I can say about that, but it's a place where this girl can connect in the same way that we've been watching her do in person, but our private Facebook group. And that's really been kind of the petri dish of research for what we're building next. And yeah, stay tuned.
Cool. So I don't know. I was trying to think of how to phrase this, but I'm just going to say it. So Susie and I have been dating. She's a wonderful person and she's on the podcast. So I feel like I almost have to explicitly bring that up from the forefront, but she's here not because we're dating.
I had no idea that it's going to go this direction.
Yeah, I don't know. I just figured why not?
Disclose.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She's someone I've learned a lot from. She actually, the time we met was right when she got into venture to join and partner with Troy Carter. And so I've learned a lot from her on the investing side, especially, but through a lot of things. And so, but anyway, Susie, why don't you talk about what you're doing at Cross Culture and with Troy and Marlon and all of that.
Yeah. Let's see. First of all, I've been here in LA for more than 25 years. And so born in South Korea and got here to Los Angeles in the middle of kindergarten. And so I have a special affinity and love for LA. And so anything LA tech, I love talking about. But 3.5 years ago, I met Troy Carter. And I think after a couple of conversations, I think it was very clear that we were both mission aligned. And I really admired his portfolio of companies that he had built on the tech and tech enabled side. At the same time, I really admired how he was such a chameleon in his career from the music industry and managing incredible artists who were singer-songwriters, very talented and who, you know, became global phenomenons. And how he translated that into his career as an investor. And, you know, for the past 2 years, he spent at Spotify. So another transition once again. And I joined him. We built a few things during the 3.5 years. First, my first project was this accelerator called Smashed. And actually, Sophia was a mentor for the entrepreneurs of that accelerator. And it's how we began to spend time together. I really appreciated her coming in and donating and kind of just sharing a very, very real story, especially at the time that she was going through the final days of Nasty Gal. And
this is pre-Girlboss the company.
This is as the book had come out.
Okay.
And already, you know, taking off. But I think there was still a lot going on at the time.
Yeah, the last 2 years, I mean, it just feels like the last 2 years were the last 10 years. And so I don't even know when that happened. It feels like so long ago, but maybe
yeah, it was September 2015.
Okay.
And I actually distinctly remember.
By the way, to interject, Susie has an amazing memory. She just literally said the date. Somehow, I don't know how you remember that, but you have an amazing memory. And as part of your superpowers, as like an investor, it's like super valuable to have a good memory, to remember people's names. And like,
but in a relationship, like you can never escape. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, this happened.
Yeah, I know. It's also
I've been with those people before and it's like, oh no. Yeah.
Yeah, but it is definitely helpful because you can kind of draw, you can draw back on memory and kind of pull what people were wearing or what visual cues. That's actually how my brain works. But yeah, I just appreciated Sophia so much for being so vulnerable and so open and just being super real with the entrepreneurs and kept in touch. But I do remember that you were telling me about thinking about Girl Boss as a potential for something more than the book, because I think you had also realized that it was becoming a movement in a way. And you were thinking about Girl Boss Radio and your first couple of sessions, as well as thinking about the foundation and how you can empower other women that are entrepreneurs building their own little things. You're in the midst of all of that. So that was my first project. But in the same time frame, we built and have been investing out of a venture fund called Cross Culture Ventures. And we run that with Marlon Nichols, our partner, who actually moved down from Mountain View after 5 years at Intel Capital to be here in LA with us. We've invested in over 30 companies. And our thesis is cultural investing. And what that means is identifying changing shifts in consumer behavior. And usually those shifts are enabled by technology platform shifts. In particular, we're interested in changing demographics as well, and the minority becoming the majority, and how that population and that underrepresented customer can be served by the next generation of companies, and really for entrepreneurs who can spot those trends and really understand those shifts deeply, have a personal pain point or a personal passion, and can, you know, leverage some kind of opportunity and arbitrage in their business and create the future.
I think it was yesterday, the day before, Andreessen Horowitz announced the project that Chris Lyons has been working on. Do you know Chris Lyons, Sophia?
No.
So Susie and I have known him for a while, and he's leading the charge on the Cultural Leadership Fund. Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's focused a lot on Black founders and also those that are building products for that type of demographic.
This particular is the fund with Will Smith?
Yeah. He's one of the LPs, if I'm not mistaken, along okay. with Susie. You have a better memory than I do.
Yeah. They announced this fund recently. Just this week. And the LPs of this fund are Will Smith, Shonda Rhimes, Rich Dennis. So they've collected influential African-American leaders, and the capital that has been put together for this fund. What's really incredible about it, it's investing alongside Andreessen's main fund. But what they've done is that the fees that Andreessen would normally take from the fund to run it, as well as the carry that they would take, and their vested interest, they are actually going to put that money to work 100% towards increasing diversity in technology.
So it's like a nonprofit venture fund?
It's not a nonprofit venture fund because they're investing in the businesses that Andreessen chooses to invest in.
But no one's taking a carrier? Just the LPs aren't? Is Andreessen?
So Andreessen's portion.
Oh, wow.
And specifically, Chris is leading the fund.
Okay.
So he's part of Andreessen.
Yeah.
And he actually spearheaded the effort to go out and raise this fund.
That's so
as well.
Great.
Their first investment, I believe, out of this fund is an entrepreneur that our fund Cross Culture backed, is Chris Bennett from Wonder School. We've been on that journey for 3 years. And what they do is a in-home network of preschools and daycares.
Cool. I've heard of this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sounds really interesting.
Yeah. It's what I love about it. I wish I was investing at the time because I like the model, because I'm a big fan of tools or companies that can support creators and entrepreneurs. And that's exactly what Wonder School is doing, is enabling, Susie knows much more about it, but they're enabling people to basically run a business out of their home and create a preschool out of their home. And in doing so, they can potentially make more money. They have more freedom. So yeah, I think that's a really
awesome space. They can do their
job
better of taking care of the kids and take the burden off, the back office burden and the acquisition burden of recruiting teachers, paying them minimum wage, or recruiting new parents, recruiting kids, and do their job the best. And Wonder School can help them.
You've done some investing a little bit. Here and there, right, Sophia?
Very little.
Yeah. Can you talk about some of the investments you made or one in particular? Or
I mean, I invested in First Dibs like maybe 4 years ago, and I think that's doing pretty well.
I'm actually not familiar with First Dibs.
Yeah, what First is Dibs is like an online marketplace for really high-end, mostly vintage furniture, fashion, jewelry. So it's like...
That's why I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, it's pretty like out there. And so it's kind of like eBay. It's like a marketplace really for the like vendors who like wouldn't normally sell their goods on eBay, or, you know, just there's this kind of like cottage industry of like very kind of collectible like retailers who are curating like collectible vintage stuff. And then one thing I really regret is that I was invited to invest in Blue Bottle, you know, maybe back in, I don't know when it was, but it was a long time ago. And it was when Index came in initially. And at the time I didn't drink coffee and I also didn't know how to invest and I still don't. But I was like, I shouldn't invest in anything that I don't understand. But I remember that Hayes Valley location when it was a garage door and there was a line down an alley for Blue Bottle Coffee. And I should have like known better, but I passed. Oh. And, you know,
and earlier this year, they sold a majority stake for, what was it, $700 million?
5.7 to Nestle. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a bummer. But Brian Meehan, who's the CEO, has become a friend. So I'm lucky for that. And yeah, missed out on that one. And then I've invested in a couple other things, but I get deal flow from non-investable businesses for the most part. Like I haven't really put it out there that like I want people to like be like, hey, do you want to invest in this great thing? Like I just haven't spent much time on it, and I do have great access, but I just haven't, like, it's just not like a known thing. And I also, you know, I was on the cover of Forbes, but I don't have like the amount of liquidity that everyone would think I do. Like I was on the cover of Forbes because I owned a lot of stock in like a company that was overvalued. So I just don't have, you know, I don't have my own fund. And then I'm pretty like cautious with what I do have.
Yeah. If I didn't raise a fund, I wouldn't be investing for the same reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't lose it all in investing in startups, unfortunately. But let's talk about, so Product Hunt is all about discovering new products and supporting makers and everything. What I love to do is talk about products that no one knows about that you love, that everyone should know about. Are there things in your home screen that you think more people need to know about? Or is there a product here in this room that you just love? Anything come to mind that's kind of come up recently?
I mean, this is so dumb, but it took me so long to figure out Evernote, and that's been really nice.
Oh, but on the Evernote train.
I got a Tesla recently, so I'm a fan of the Tesla app.
Which model did you get?
I got the Model 3, and it's really nice. I'm like, we bought it together, so we're sharing it, Galen and I, which is very symbolic and cool to like buy something with your partner, because I've never done that with anybody. But we're sharing it, and I loved my car until I drove that for 2 days in a row. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, this feels like so outdated. Anyway, I never thought I would be that person.
I don't drive. Well, I
that's
well,
crazy I guess I for do. Being in LA this long.
Right, yeah. On the note of Tesla, before I stopped driving, I drove an all-electric Nissan Leaf for two generations. And, you know, as I started working with Troy and Atom Factory, I didn't have access to the same kind of supercharger as I had before. And I loved the Nissan Leaf, but I definitely started having range anxiety because that one is 100 miles that, you know, if you go on a freeway, it goes down to 70 pretty quickly. When my 39-month lease ran out, which, by the way, we're investors in a company that we love called Fair, which makes that inflexible lease obsolete. It's a disclosure that we are an investor, but I actually do love the flexibility and transparency of that app. You could all do it in a swipe of an app, and you could just go to the dealership to pick up the car and not have to negotiate with the salesman. But after driving the Nissan Leaf and after the lease ran out, I just decided to go all in on the all-day rideshare. So my friends and even you, Sophia, you've given me a ride. They just know to ask, hey, do you need a ride here?
I didn't realize that was why.
Yes.
Okay.
And yeah, Troy makes fun of me for that. It's like the friend Uber.
Uber.
So it's been fun to do it in LA though, because I do think that when we're talking about, you know, companies and apps that we love, what Lyft and what Uber have done for Los Angeles as an ecosystem has really made it possible just to zip around, especially for nightlife. You know, I think a previous generation of people who go out at night, you know, there are friend groups that all have DUIs. But I think that, you know, that has also become obsolete in LA, because you can hop from downtown LA to Hollywood to Venice in one night by using the rideshare platforms. And I guess now in LA, we haven't gotten the same, oh, maybe we will soon, and it's in the process of happening. But, you know, the last mile mobility platforms
like Bird and
yeah,
we saw probably a dozen birds on the way here.
Actually, LA was where they launched. And I remember it was winter time last year in LA, you know, complete summer, winter in December. And Andrew Chen and Brianne Kimmel were visiting LA and we were having brunch. And he asked, like, have you seen one of these? We were in Santa Monica. And I said, no, what is it? And he's like, oh, it's Bird. It's these dockless scooters that are going to be everywhere pretty soon. And I remember taking a little ride in it. And, you know, now less than 1 year later, how many cities are they in, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. It's in their last valuation was it 1 billion or 2 billion?
Went to two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think. But what was really incredible, a recent Bird experience I had was after breakfast in Culver City at Destroyer, which is an amazing little restaurant, took a Bird over to the Hayden Tract in Culver City Expo Line and took that Expo Line to Santa Monica to the KCRW office and then took the Bird from the Expo Line to KCRW. And I think it was $5 round trip, everything from two Birds as well as the Expo Line ticket. And so I think that is kind of the epitome of what is possible. And it was basically a magical experience and I had fun.
Stay tuned to the end of this podcast for my talk with Ashish Jain from GE Ventures and Avitas Systems, a startup using drones and AI to inspect industrial assets like oil refineries and power lines. Starting a business is hard. Accepting money shouldn't be. That's why Product Hunt is built on Stripe. In the early days, before we had a real team or any funding, we spent way more time than anticipated trying to figure out how to collect payments from our customers. We cobbled together a bunch of different solutions, but the end result wasn't professional, our accounting was messy, and even worse, it was a terrible experience for our users. Then we switched to Stripe. Integration was easy, and we started collecting money from people around the world without janky redirects or a lot of friction. Today, we use Stripe to collect subscription revenue from makers and startups around the world using Shipt. Their web dashboard makes it really easy for anyone on the team to create new SKUs or discounts for customers without writing a single line of code. Whether you're building a marketplace, a SaaS company, or a subscription product, Stripe makes it easier to get paid. They also make it easier to get started with Stripe Atlas. Founders all over the world can incorporate a new business, set up a bank account, and access everything they need to get running in just a few clicks. If you want to start a business and make money on the internet, check out Stripe.com.
Have you guys seen Universe? Like, you can make a website in an app.
Yeah.
It's really pretty.
Have you created some websites yourself?
I have just for fun, just to try it out, but it's pretty fascinating.
One question about Universe, because I played with it an early version almost 2 years ago, I think. And it was kind of, at the time, it was a little bit more complex and less intuitive than I think it is now. But what kind of websites did you just play around for fun, or was there a theme to any of them?
I tried to make like an invite. I made an invite and you can like text the invite to people. So it feels like you can use it as like a paperless post, or you can use it as just like almost like a digital business card. It's pretty limited in terms of how it's not Squarespace, but you can build a whole website using a mobile app that has like web URL. Mm-hmm.
On the note of digital business card, earlier this week I was at Y Combinator Demo Day. Somebody said, hey, let's trade info. And I think I might have said, oh, we don't have Bump, or maybe not, but basically, he told me about this new app, which I had seen launch earlier that day, and it's Hi Hello. Did you see that?
I did, but
so
I didn't
used it for the first time, which was really cool.
Really?
Hi Hello.
How does it work?
Hi Hello.
Is it similar to Bump, where you bump cell phones?
No. What you do is you take a photo. They open up Hi Hello, and you take a photo of that QR code. Automatically, it sends you a Safari link, a live web link, with their contact info that you can then save. So it has everything at once, from, you know, cell phone number to name, title, email.
Do you remember Highlight?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Highlight was
South by Southwest the winner of South by Southwest like 2014?
No, it was earlier than that. I think 2012 or 2013. But Highlight was bold. So Highlight was an app where you turn it on and in the background it would track where you are. And then it would report to anyone on the network, you know, here's where Susie is, or here's where Ryan is. And so you'd kind of generally know where people are and who's around you. And you could then, of course, kind of like stalk their profile and see, like, if you're at a coffee shop, for example, you can kind of see who's on Highlight in this coffee shop around me. It ultimately didn't work out, but it was such a cool idea because it was so weird. And
I think it sucked everyone's battery dry.
It's kind of creepy.
That was part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I would never.
I know, but aren't creepy products kind of, they compel me because the ones that are creepy, they're sometimes like a little niche of people who will grow that will adopt it. Like using your real name on Facebook, for example, was actually weird for a lot of people in the beginning. It's like, don't want to use my real name on the internet. Now
I'm now one of the creepy people that has used Foursquare and Swarm for almost 10 years.
No, you're like a mayor or something on Foursquare. Aren't you like
I have 50 mayorships or something like that. But I know the number of check-ins and it's like in almost 13,000.
Yeah, it's wild.
You know, it's like you don't really count the places you go in real life. And then you do it digitally and you're like, wow, I do a lot of stuff.
And this part is all part of my strategy or how I am able to remember things because I've checked in. And Swarm has a feature called Search Your History, where if I enter in, if I think I know the name of the place or if I think about the city where it was, it'll literally populate. If I click Los Angeles, it'll populate all of my check-ins in Los Angeles. And I could usually go like one layer deeper than that too.
Kind of like that weird Instagram map. Do they do away with that?
I think they did away with it. And then I think they came back with it.
Yeah. Instagram, it's kind of evolved more to, of course, stories and everything. But you can also, I feel like it's almost been effectively replaced by hashtags. And because a lot of people use hashtags for locations and things like that nowadays.
I like Polymail. I started using Polymail.
LA company.
And it got a lot better. Like I used it a while ago. Maybe I just didn't invest the amount of time I needed, but I'm liking it for now. Mm-hmm. It has like, you know, it has like a boomerang feature where, you know, you can pop stuff back in your, that's like so important to me because there's just stuff where it's like, I don't need to respond to this, or, you know, I go hassle someone and I need to remember to hassle them again like a few days later. And the shortcuts are really nice. Like it's way faster than Gmail. I'm still deciding if it's like efficient where you jump from an application back to your browser all the time to email and open links, and but I'm enjoying that. And then really unknown app that I love, if you're, I'm not like that into astrology, I'm just kind of narcissistic and I want to know like what's happening in my life, whether or not it's actually, you know, a thing. I guess I think there's like a fair amount of truth to astrology, but there's an app called Time Passages, which doesn't even sound like astrology, but it's like, I think it's like $40, the app itself.
$40 app?
I think so. Look it up because I can't see the price because I bought it, but it's kind of like what a professional astrologer would use. It shows you your whole chart, but it's like day by day. It's like a better version of that one. What's that one that's like gotten kind of popular now?
There are two right now that are just starting, CoStar. And then Sanctuary.
Ooh, I haven't seen Sanctuary.
Sanctuary is running as a Facebook Messenger bot right now, but I think both run out of New York.
The better version of, I mean, it's just like a more, like a less cool version of CoStar with like a, probably a deeper layer of, it can be very accurate. And they're like paragraphs and I don't know who's right, like if someone writes them or.
Interesting.
I have been trying to introduce more meditation into my life. And for me, that means 5 minutes, which maybe doesn't even do anything. But over the past 2 years, you know, I love Headspace. It's an LA company, but a good friend of mine, and I'm not an investor in the company, a good friend of mine started a company called Simple Habit. And I was on since day one. I actually hunted it to Product Hunt. And I love the tagline on the Product Hunt post because it was a vacation for your mind. And it just really rang true. Ooh. And I've been on the app for, let me send you a referral link, please.
Okay.
Because I now pay for this app as well. I think I might pay $15 a month, which is a lot, but I get access to more than just a wheel of a few meditations at different times of the day. What I love about it, and I've really watched for this company, I've watched the journey, like the product development journey, and it started with that wheel of different meditations that you can listen to. And I really liked, in comparison to Headspace, that you could listen to multiple voices, multiple teachers, as opposed to just Andy's. And I've actually really enjoyed a few of the teachers on Simple Habit, but they started to do things like monthly challenges and leaderboards. And my favorite thing is that they actually show me a calendar of the month. And if I've meditated that day, it just pops a little circle for that date. And
so you can remember.
There's a couple of themes. One, we already talked about her Swarm addiction and 13,000 check-ins too. You're really, you love collecting data and having a history of things.
I do.
And the Simple Habit kind of like streak is one of them. The other is Nike Plus.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I made a goal of, mindfulness and health and fitness has been kind of my couple year goal. So just back on the simple habit thing real quick. My longest streak for the daily meditations is 68 right now. And at this moment, I go in and out. And at this moment, I'm on 24 day streak. And so I'm kind of working towards getting there. But I realized just recently that, so I'll do a meditation, a 5-minute meditation when I wake up. And then usually right when I crawl into bed, and it helps me go to sleep and helps me get up in the morning, which, you know, moving from 5 minutes to 10 minutes, an investment from the day, I realized that I have invested over 2,500 minutes into this app, which for me is a lot. But to Ryan's point about this, like, tracking and kind of data and the feedback loop, I've really enjoyed setting a goal of fitness. And I have been running very slowly. My family has a hashtag. It's the hashtag running ruse. And
follow them on Instagram. There's an account.
Now there's an Instagram account with 29 followers. And I set a goal to run 150 miles in 2017. And I promise myself for accountability, because for me, Twitter is a dialogue with yourself, especially if you don't have a following. And I promised myself that I would tweet every time I run, and it could be my minimum is 1 mile. And usually that means that I'm running like before I need to shower.
Yeah. Yes.
But little known to me, across 2017, I ran 200 miles, which I think that feedback loop of sharing on Twitter and forcing myself to log, that really, really helped me. And then now that we're in 2018, I didn't really give myself a goal this year, but lo and behold, I'm 87 runs in this morning.
Where are you tracking this?
Nike.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm using the Nike Plus running app.
Nike Plus.
Mm-hmm. And man, I have a habit of counting my miles on the month by month, and I'm at something like 230 for the year now. So I've now crossed my 2017 goal, and now I'm talking about this too much, but I might hit 300.
Nice.
It's definitely one of my favorite products.
Some of the aspects of accountability and having social reinforcement, not to spoil anything, but it touches what you're building, the thing at GrowBoss. Again, we don't need to talk specifics.
And what you're building with Makers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mutual accountability.
Yeah.
I mean,
talk about that.
Should I plug it on our own podcast? I mean, yeah, we've been building it and kind of maturing something called Makers, which is a place to share your goals. It could be fitness goals, it could be things like I want to redesign a homepage for my product, or I want 100 beta users. And so we have right now intentionally a very small community of hundreds of people sharing these goals every single week. And the idea is it creates accountability, allows you to, you know, put something in writing that you want to accomplish. And then the best part is that people now see these goals, and a lot of these people, they might be designers or engineers that can help you with particular things. And so if you need 100 beta users, we'll see people say, hey, I'll give you some help. Like, I'll give you some feedback. Or if you're writing a blog post, we see people come and say, I'll read a rough draft if I can help, you know, and provide feedback. And the realization is that we don't really have place on the internet to share what we want help with. It's kind of weird if you on Twitter or Facebook say, I need help with this. it exposes yourself. But if you build a place on the internet where that's the default behavior to share what you're working on, then hopefully we can help other people, mm-hmm. is the idea.
It's really cool. I remember Complete, that app from a couple of years ago. It had a little bit of the same social dynamic of processing and completing your tasks and goals. That's why it was called Complete.
Yeah.
And I actually just started using Trello again after being off of Trello for a couple of years. And it's nice to think that Trello is a place where I share it out with Danny, our chief of staff, and he shares his with me as well. But it's nice to think about if other people from the product and community could keep you accountable. But while we're on the topic of Makers, Ryan, I think, you know, when you met Sophia, I think you saw a lot of parallels in how she builds community and how she was thinking about her audience and how to enable that audience. You should share about meeting Sophia and kind of seeing what the opportunity was. And
yeah. Well, you mentioned earlier, like, GrowBoss, when it comes up in conversation, I sort of describe it, it's like this similar to Product Hunt, it's a weird hybrid of many things. It's not just a media company, but it's like fundamentally, in my mind, feel free to correct me if you disagree, but fundamentally you've built and are building a community.
Yes.
And the community base is what's brilliant, because I think communities are underrated. Like, if you can build a strong brand and a strong community, you can segue that community into many different things. And it could be building products. It could be, of course, events, merchandise. Like, there's a million things that you can do, but it all kind of comes from this core community piece, which for Product Hunt, we've built a community. Now we're expanding with makers and we're doing podcasts and like we're doing a lot of things too. But that's what got me excited about GrowBoss. It wasn't just like a pure like media play.
Yeah, I think that's the power of a brand, you know, is like you can transact in a bunch of different directions when you're a platform. That's your main thing. And platforms can become really huge. But when you have a community and there's a sense of context around what they're talking about and what they're there to do. And ultimately, if they help one another, that's like as good as the internet gets, right? And I think that's, you know, in essence, what we're both trying to do.
When you're building this community, it came seemed like very organic in terms of how it formed.
And even the company, to some extent. Yeah, I mean, like, I like to say that I've started two brands on accident, but this is my first business I've started on purpose, which, you know, to be deliberate and thoughtful day one about how I'm building a team and the business and the company and, like, not just shooting from the hip or starting an eBay store as I did, right, 12 years ago with no education or experience has been really great. You know, I never thought when I wrote a book that it would become my second act. And I don't know what I would be doing right now post Nasty Gal had I not written that book. And it became, in a lot of ways, like a lot more meaningful to people than fashion was. I think we had it. There was a similar essence to Nasty Gal, even though it was fashion. It was like, go be bold. Like, don't be a wallflower. Like, that was very much, and my voice was a big part of that brand. And so, you know, the voice is still part of the brand. It's still creating a place where women can see themselves in something that's aspirational, but not bewildering or overly academic or too expensive. Like, it's very democratic. And, you know, in a lot of ways, it's the same thing I've always done, but the product is extremely different and there's no inventory sitting in a warehouse that has to go on sale. So no returns,
yeah.
You know, so that's really exciting. And what's next is, you know, figuring out how this is ultimately like a venture scalable business, which, you know, we've been working out over the last year and a half, but just started running as fast as we could with this community and brand that was already built. And now it's, you know, how can we build a digital product that can grow as large as we want it to.
Nice. And you have the rally coming up. What date is that?
Yeah, so we do something called the Girl Boss Rally, which is our conference. It's twice a year. We just had one in April in downtown LA. And we had about 800 women from 19 countries and 230 cities come in for it. And we have one November 17th and 18th in New York. And we'll have about 1,000 women. And it's over 2 days, which is new for us. It's usually one day. Arianna Huffington speaking. We have some really great speakers lined up and more to be announced. And you can buy a ticket at girlbossrally.com.
Cool. Nice plug. Susie, any plug for you before we wrap it up?
Oh, so funny. I didn't know you were going to ask this, but one of the products that I didn't mention earlier, I've been all about this trying to create habits and routines for myself. And this is Ryan's favorite thing to do, create habits and routines for himself. But one of the things that have been really important to me in this vein of health and fitness, my dad says health is wealth. And I've never been like a vitamins or supplements person, but over the past month or so, I've gotten into the habit of taking Ritual vitamins mm-hmm. in the morning. Katarina is an awesome CEO and leader of a movement herself. And at night, I take Seed, which is a new product that's only been around for 2 or 3 months.
Did you get to invest in that?
I did. So we are a small investor in Ritual and a small investor in Ritual out of Atom Factory, just Troy's personal angel investments, and an investor in Seed through our fund Cross Culture Ventures, two different entities. But it's fundamentally two different businesses where Seed is a, do I see FOMO on your face?
yeah. I'm like just staring into space, like thinking I wish I had been invited to do that. I don't use it, but I do take probiotics because my boyfriend says like he like sourced the right probiotic and forces me to take it. Otherwise, I'm a bit gassy. So he like forces me to. He's like, this is relationship insurance. Please,
this is
take
for
this.
Me. It's for his own. It's for selfish. Him. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
At your place.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me too.
We did this.
Yeah. Talk soon.
Bye guys.
Bye.
Stay tuned for my talk with Ashish Jain from Avitas Systems, a startup using drones and AI to inspect industrial assets like oil refineries and power lines. Thanks for joining us, Ashish, and thanks to GE Ventures for making this interview possible. How are people
doing this without this technology?
Let's imagine you look at a particular industrial complex. Imagine you have to inspect that. First, you have to shut down that facility because it's hazardous for somebody to climb up there using ropes or ladders and collect the data. Second problem is that it's a very manual task, and the skill and the expertise level of people vary. So there is a tremendous quality issue. There's a prime example where you could actually send an industrial drone to collect the data.
And what can you do with more consistent data collection?
If I collect data precisely and the quality of collection goes up, my analysis goes up, my outcome goes up, and the beauty of all this is that it's completely repeatable and it can be automated, and you can really remove the human element out of the dangerous, dirty area. And then we have advanced AI, really industrial AI, which interprets the data. And then finally, what we do is we basically provide outcomes in terms of intelligent planning tools, decision support systems to our customers. Right now, this particular space is fairly early stage of digitalization. From our perspective, it's a tremendous opportunity.
Thanks again, GE Ventures, for making this interview possible. GE Ventures invests in startups that develop transformational technologies to solve big problems. Visit ge.com/ventures to learn more. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, share the podcast with your friends on Twitter and tag a guest you'd like to hear in a future episode. See you soon.